So, of course, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers inviting me to this interesting workshop and, of course, also to this beautiful place on Earth. So I'm really happy to be here. I will talk about spinel compounds and about frustrated lattices because, as you know, in the spinel compounds, you have two types. You have the A site and the B site, and both are frustrated or can be frustrated, and we'll talk about that. So the talk mainly deals with two, let's say, minor points. The one is I look at the B sites in the chromium, in the chromite spinels, and talk about spin-phonon coupling in systems which are believed to be driven, or where the phase transition is driven by spin-Jantella effect or spin-Tella effect. That's one part, and that's dealing with the B side. The second talk deals with the A side. The A side is a diamond lattice, and depending on the coupling of J1 and J2, it also can be strongly frustrated. And I give you some examples about this frustration, and I try to compare with recent theories which have been set up concerning a spiral spin liquid. This work all has been done in my group in Augsburg. However, you see the green people, Veronika Fritsch moved to Karlsruhe, Joachim Hemberger to Cologne, and Natalia Tristan to Dresden. So they moved, although they contributed a lot to this work here. So if an experimenter talks about frustration, it's very simple. We take a compound, measure the susceptibility, and look what's coming out. And usually you have, if you have localized moment, you find something like a Curie-Weiss law and inverse susceptibility extrapolates to some Curie-Weiss temperature. If it's an antiferromagnet, it's minus. And so you would expect roughly the positive side gives you the sign of the leading interaction. So that's the leading interaction. And then if the system does not order down to very low temperatures, then you say this system is frustrated. And I think it's Ramirez set the scale that if it's a factor of 10, then it's strongly frustrated. That results from geometrically frustrated systems. And of course, this is now a system where you have something like a cooperative paramagnet, or you could say a spin liquid is forming. And at the lowest temperature, of course, the system is fluctuating between many similar ground states in energy. And maybe some non-leading interactions will drive the system in some of these ground states, and sometimes these ground states can therefore be very exotic. So, shortly, the spinel structure. The spinel, that's AB2X4. X4 can be oxygen, sulfur, and selenide and telluride. They set this X ion set up a FCC lattice. This FCC lattice, you fill in the octahedral sites by the B compounds. They have an octahedral environment, and the A sites in the tetrahedral sites. So this is given here. That's the octahedral sites, that's the B sites, and the A sites are in a tetrahedral environment. And of course, we know that the B sites itself constitute a pyrochlorolattice, and the pyrochlorolattice we learned already this morning is strongly frustrated, and I think that's rather well known. The A site, and that's not shown here, the A site is a diamond lattice, and the diamond lattice is set up by two interpenetrating FCC lattices, and depending on J1 and J2, the within one FCC lattice and in between the two FCC lattices, you can have very strong frustration, and this was a theory by Bergman et al. This was where I try to make some comparison with the experiment. So let's look about the systems we investigated so far. On the A side, we looked for manganese, iron, and cobalt. The manganese has a half-filled shell, so you could say there is no spin-orbit coupling. It's a spin-only system. The iron is Jantella active. You have a hole in the lower doublet, And of course, the Yantella effect will be very weak in the doublet. And I would say, experimentally, I would guess the Yantella effect is of the order of 10 Kelvin to 100 Kelvin for systems like that. And in the cobalt compound, again, you have a full doublet and a half-filled triplet, and you would expect that the spin-orbit coupling must be very low, must be very weak. For the B-side, I only show you chromite, chrome ions. They all have a half-filled triplet. That's no spin-orbit coupling, and the spin is just 3/2. Iron can be free plus, for instance, in iron copper, but then you have the problem that iron sometimes has the tendency for inversion. But in principle, iron can also go to the B side, and in the A side you also can force it to be free plus. But here we always choose systems in where it is 2+ and where it's Yantella active. So the phase diagram, which is in principle is not a phase diagram, but I think it illustrates what's going on. Here I plotted the Curie-Weiss temperature versus ordering temperatures. You see, in principle here you should be the lattice constant. But if I plot the lattice constant, this phase diagram looks very ugly. So I decided to use the Curie-Weiss temperatures. So these are the experimentally observed Curie-Weiss temperatures of zinc chromium oxide, magnesium chromium oxide, cadmium chromium oxide, or mercury, chromium sulfide, and so on. Of course, now these are straight lines. These are the Curie-Weiss temperatures for the antiferromagnets and for the ferromagnets. And of course, these are the experimentally observed Curie-Weiss temperatures. So naturally, over here, you have the antiferromagnets. And you see, whatever is the exchange. Here, for instance, you have 100 Kelvin ferromagnetic exchange. Here you have minus 400 Kelvin antiferromagnetic exchange. Nevertheless, the ordering temperatures of the order of 10 Kelvin for all these compounds. And finally, you come in this ferromagnetic region of cadmium chromium sulfide and mercury chromium selenide, which are semiconducting ferromagnets. I think it's clear from this that, for instance, in zinc chromium oxide, you have an enormous range where you cool down and where you have something like, or can you have a spin liquid, and you have this transition temperature. On the other hand, here, for instance, mercury chromium sulfide, it has 150 Kelvin positive Curie-Weiss temperature. It's strongly dominated by ferromagnetic exchange. Nevertheless, it orders at 20 Kelvin antiferromagnetically and does very similar things. And finally, zinc chromium sulfide has a Curie-Weiss temperature of 0. And it does, nevertheless, it does the same things. So it's clear what's going on. Here you have a direct chromium-chromium exchange because the oxygen ions are small. So that's a strong antiferromagnetic interaction. Here you have the big sulfides, and the sulfides, you have chromium-sulfide-chromium exchange. It's a 90-degree exchange that makes them ferromagnetic. And you have no direct exchange left. Here the direct exchange, of course, is exponentially vanishing, but you have to take care because, in addition, you must have something like chromium XA chromium, chromium XA X chromium, a complicated exchange over three partners, which is antiferromagnetic, it's very weak, but you have 50, of the order of 50 very similar exchange paths. But nevertheless, you see you have this competing antiferromagnetic to ferromagnetic interaction. So these systems are interesting because over here a lot of work has been done, and I only mention here from our chairman, and there was similar ideas from Yamashita and Ueda, and they explain the structural phase transitions in these compounds by a spin-driven Yantella effect, so that the spin interaction forces the lattice to distort, and that then releases or makes it possible that the system undergoes spin ordering with a slight phase transition. But in the moment, I'm more interested in the dynamic properties, and I measure the phonon properties. And there was this theory starting by Masida and then by Fenny and Rabe, and the first optical experiments have been done by Sushkov et al. And they show that in these systems, you have a strong splitting of the phonon modes although the splitting in the lattice constant is very weak. So with the lattice constant alone, you never could explain this enormous phonon splitting. If you take the lattice constants and calculate the phonon, that the difference in the phonon mode, you would end up with, let's say, 2 inverse centimeters. In reality, you find 10, 20, or 30 inverse centimeters. But I would like to mention that my good old friend Bruno Lüthi found that out, let's say, 35 years ago. I know at this time I just started my PhD, and he said, look at this crazy compound. We have zinc chromium oxide. It behaves like a Yantella system, although we know it is not Yantella active. And he said, that's a mystery, and I don't understand it, and he publishes as it is. But you see, this elastic interaction starts from the very high end, goes down, and it really looks like a Yantella system. Although we know it, chromium has almost no spin-orbit coupling. So, but that was a long time ago. So our results, what we did is just to measure the phonons as function of temperature, sometimes as magnetic field, for this is a strong dominated by antiferromagnetic direct exchange. This is strongly dominated by ferromagnetic exchange. And this is all between. For instance, zinc chromium 2S4 has a zero Curie-Weiss temperature. So there must be an equal strength of ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic exchange. And if you look now at the temperature dependence, we see two things. First, you can look at the splitting. In the geometrically frustrated oxide, you see we have a splitting. These are the phonon wave numbers. For instance, this is mode 2. This is the splitting of this mode at low temperatures, and that splits into three modes, according to our analysis. Zinc chrome selenide, which is already dominated by ferromagnetic exchange, mode 1 splits into two modes. Zinc chrome sulfide splits into all modes split. The ferromagnetic dominated mercury compound, which nevertheless is an antiferromagnet, does not split at all. So this is interesting enough, but the other observation you can make is we try to describe the temperature dependence of the phonons by some normal lattice anharmonicity. For instance, here we find very well. Here you see you cannot match it, and there you have some positive shift. Definitely here you have some negative shift. And the old theories of Bartensberger tell you this comes from antiferromagnetic exchange and this comes from ferromagnetic exchange. And so, again, you have this splitting of the phonon modes and you have the shifts due to this interaction. And if you analyze this data, of course, you can see significant differences, but nevertheless, for me, it's unclear how a system which is dominated by ferromagnetic exchange behaves very similar like a system that behaves like that's geometrically frustrated. And this, I think, is not explained theoretically and has to be thought in detail. Of course, you need a mode analysis that you know. For instance, it's clear that in the modes here and here, chromium vibrates against oxygen or the sulfide. And so in this case, you understand, you think that should be dominated more by the ferromagnetic exchange. But sometimes, for instance, that's not true. For instance, here you clearly see there is a dominating antiferromagnetic exchange, and that's, for instance, unclear. So two side remarks. I think if I look at the theories, predominantly you see a splitting of one mode. For instance, here it's a triplet in the phonons, in the infrared active phonons, in these two modes. If you look carefully, you see here the temperature dependence. You could say one mode, two mode, it's three modes. That was our analysis. But if you really look careful, then you see that all the modes split. Yeah, this is mode one, and you see there, that's just temperatures from 5 Kelvin to 10 Kelvin. And you see 10 Kelvin, it's a single mode, and then you have this shoulder. This is the mode which really splits, but also here you have shoulders, here you have two shoulders. So finally, even in this geometrically constrained or geometrically frustrated samples, you have a splitting of all modes, although only one really shows significant this splitting, which was described theoretically. The next point, of course, is that in the selenide, in the zinc chromium selenide, which already Tokura mentioned is also a possible multiferroic candidate, Zinc chromium selenide has ferromagnetic planes where the spins are twisted by about 20 degrees. And with 5 Tesla, you can make the system to a ferromagnet. So you fully can suppress the antiferromagnetic order, and you make the system you induce ferromagnets. And here, allow me this, here you would think this is C over T versus T. You would say, okay, that's also a T-square dependence. I thought that in the beginning. But then if you look at the data in more detail, you see the blue line is just at the critical temperature. That it's more, probably it's more exponential. So what I want to say is one really has to look at low temperatures to conclude that there are so many systems with a T-square dependence, but probably one has to look in a number if it's really T-square or if it's only T-square in a limited temperature range. But we were interested in the phonon splitting, and of course it's clear at 5 Kelvin the red line is at 0 Tesla. And of course if you suppress the phase transition at 7 Tesla, then you have only one mode. It's clear that you suppress this phonon splitting completely with 7 Tesla. And with 7 Tesla you also make the system to a ferromagnet, and you suppress the structural phase transition. And think 7 Tesla is only 7 Kelvin. That's really amazing that a relatively low field can do that. So far to the A side. Let's go to the A side. At the A side, we have, as I told you, two interpenetrating FCC lattices. And we have, of course, J1 and J2. And here I try to look in the real structure. That's a cut along one symmetry. And you see the red balls are the chromium. This is, sulfur or oxygen. And this is the intermediate. That's the A ion. But you see, you have these very different paths. And J1 and J2, they couple the two sublattices, and J prime, this one, is the exchange within one sublattice. So that's from the real structure. And so it's clear to calculate these different paths from here over here to here to here to here. It will be very complicated, but nevertheless, in Bergman et al.'s work, they made a phase diagram with ordering temperature versus the strength of J2, the ratio of J2 over J1. And you see, at low magnitudes, you have the nil state. And moving to higher, if they are almost equal, you have this spiral spin state, and I will comment on that later. And the idea is that over here, something like a spiral spin liquid develops, and order by disorder then finally finds a ground state for the system. So, and we try if we can compare with these predictions. But first, some of the systems. First, we looked at the scandium compounds, and you looked at iron and manganese. And you see here is the Curie-Weiss temperature determined by the inverse susceptibility. It's for the iron compound red, 50 Kelvin, by the manganese compound, 25 Kelvin. In the iron compound, the order is well below 30 millikelvin. So far, no one found where the ordering temperature is. And there's also no spin glass or no real freezing. That's always dynamic down to the lowest temperature. The manganese scandium compound orders at 2 Kelvin. And so I would say if this is 2 over 25, that's more than a factor of 10. So I would say this I can call strongly frustrated. And this I compare theoretical predictions. The problem in the iron compound is it's Jantella active. The Jantella effect is also suppressed, is not observed. And of course, this could make this system so rare. The heat capacity, it's a rather unusual, it's double logarithmic. So it looks not really like a heat capacity. It's C over T versus T on a double logarithmic scale. The green is cadmium indium 2S4 to get a rough estimate of the phonons, which we then rescaled with the masses to subtract the phonon contribution. But it's clear in the manganese-scandium compound, you see this onset for the magnetic aura. This is a double peak if you look closely. It's about 2.1 and 1.8 Kelvin. And here have some nuclear contributions. The iron-scandium compound, you see, it goes down to low values. It looks like a residual value. It's unclear to me if this is defect-derived. This is polycrystalline work. Or if it's some, let's say, intrinsic nature. Anyway, you see there is no sign of any order, neither of Yantella nor of spin order. And if you calculate now, subtracting the phonons, if you calculate now the entropies, then you see in the manganese compound you expect RLN6, and this you reach at 30 Kelvin, 25 Kelvin, that's just the Curie-Weiss temperature. That makes sense. The ordering temperature is over here. So a lot of entropy, of course, the entropy decreases below the Curie-Weiss temperature, and at the ordering temperature, it's already only a tenth of the full entropy. In the iron compound, if you take into account also the orbitals, you think that the entropy of the iron compound also covers this RLN5 plus RLN2, but maybe at very high temperatures. So it seems really that in the iron compound, the orbitals and the spins are in a frozen or liquid, probably in a liquid state, because we also have no evidence for something like a spin glass. So let's have a look under neutron scattering. This is manganese scandium 2S4. This is the energy scale, wave vector transfer, and the color scale is the intensity. And this is all done on powder. And you see here the quasi-elastic riff. You see here very well the nuclear Bragg reflections. And if you go from 75 Kelvin to 1.6 Kelvin, you see that here I have another Bragg reflection. So it really undergoes magnetic order. But you also see that while here you have this normal quasi-elastic scattering. These are scans along these lines, which give you a width of magnitude magnetic exchange. At low temperatures, you have now really a magnon dispersion. This you see a little like here and here. And so this is a well-ordered magnet, but at very low temperatures. So we also looked into the quasi-elastic scattering, and we found out that before this magnetic Bragg reflections develop, you really have some quasi-elastic scattering. And I have to say, it's all on 0.75 is the ordering wave vector, so that's some complex spirals. And before you have the order, you have this broad quasi-elastic contribution, which really shifts as you're cooling down. And in this work of Bergmann et al., you see that a very similar observation, that this quasi-elastic peak really shifts on decreasing temperature. And so it seems that finally you reach some spiral static ground state, but below, at higher temperatures, you also always have this ground state, but nevertheless, the spiral has not really formed yet. And we also have a comparison. This is the final structure of manganese scandium 2S4, and this is some comparison with a predicted structure in this parameter phase. But let me compare that now to the iron compound. In the iron compound, that looks very different. In the iron compound, at high temperatures, again, energy versus wave vector, you have very strong antiferromagnetic fluctuations already at 80 Kelvin. If you cool down, that looks really like a magnon dispersion. That looks like a magnon dispersion with an anisotropy gap, but the system is not ordered. This is strong, let's say, paramagnons with a gap. The gap you see in this scan's energy versus intensity. If you go up here, you see that at lowest temperatures is a true gap, but the system is not ordered. And I believe, but I do not know, that this is due to the orbital degrees of freedom. This is because the orbitals do not order, but the orbitals still fluctuate. The system does not find any spin order. But nevertheless, I would propose This is one of rare systems where you could say it's a spin liquid and an orbital liquid. So finally, in my remaining 4 minutes, I show some results on the aluminates. In the aluminates, we looked for manganese, iron, and cobalt. You see, this is just the heat capacity versus T, C over T versus T. And you see, the manganese system, it's uninteresting. All this Curie Weiss temperatures are of the order of 100 Kelvin. So this is a normal system. The manganese system orders at 41 Kelvin. It's a normal antiferromagnet, so it seems not very interesting. These two systems do not order. You could say that might be something like a spin glass transition, but if, it's very unconventional. Never. This is really, the spin's freezing, obviously, but not in a conventional way. And let's have a closer look to the systems by neutron scattering. And you see, again, at 1.6 Kelvin, this free systems. And you see the manganese compound has here a magnetic back refraction, and you see some developing marginal branches. And if you look at the sublattice magnetization at the specific back point, you see you have this order parameter, and you have this spin order, and you have an ordered moment, which you really understand. These two compounds do not order. And again, you see in the cobalt system, you see that something like developing Magnum dispersion, but no order. In the iron compound, again, it seems you develop a strong gap, and this gap probably again is due to the orbitals, which obviously are not ordered again. So in the iron compound, due to this orbital degrees of freedom, the system always develops something like a spin gap and does not find any, let's say, conventional order. And finally, again, some comparison with the work from Valence and his co-workers. In the cobalt-aluminum system, we also looked for the intensity as function of Q. That's the summed powder intensity as function of Q, and we made some fit. You see, that looks like a liquid structure factor. And we compare with these predictions from Leo Balan's group, and that looks, it's not the same, but it looks really similar, and it seems that this recovers really the main physics. I also would like to say that Suzuki et al. Just published their heat capacity results, and they claim, and that looks rather convincing, they claim they have an exponent from 2.5. The speed, the heat capacity goes with 2.5. We thought in our data, maybe I can come back to that, we thought it's rather 2. You see, but that's not so really convincing. And the theoretical prediction in this theory paper is 7/3. So the theory is just in between the two experiments. This is the conclusion. Hey, do I have 1 minute? Perfect. Then I make some advertisement. I hope I have it here. Now, first, I don't want to talk about the crown of the British Empire. We know that already. But I make some advertisement. You know, this is a meteorite. And this meteorite is of the group of astatite chondrites. And the astatite chondrites, they are more or less all iron chromium 2S4. Indeed, iron chromium 2S4 has been discovered in meteorites like this. But the nice thing, this is very close to my university, and it's Neuschwanstein-Free. It's one of the fragments they found, because you see this beautiful fairy tale, so please come to Augsburg. We don't have so much sun, we have no sea, but we have this beautiful fairy tale castle, and you see here this trace of this meteorite coming down, and there was one physicist trying to find it, and he found it. And then the nice thing was that this poor Carl Wimmer, he had to make a large process if he really owns this meteorite. And I think half a year ago, the lawyer said, if you find it, it's yours, and it does not belong to the state of Bavaria. So that's some advertisement. So thank you for your attention.
time for questions.
I'm somewhat confused, probably something simple, maybe I just missed something. You said that you have diamond lattice and you represent it as two FCC lattice displaced, and because of that have two different exchange constants, one within sublattices, another between sublattices. Yeah. But in diamond lattice, there's only one type of nearest neighbor bonds. And you can choose your FCC lattice displaced along 1-1-1 or along 1-1-1 just as well. So why there would be two different nearest neighbor constants? Is it, or are you speaking about second neighbors or nearest neighbors?
No, there are differences. There are really two exchange constants, J prime and J2 prime, and they couple the two sublattices. And that's first nearest neighbors and second nearest neighbors.
But and first nearest neighbors also couple two sublattices, just as well.
No, I think the first, I probably have to ask that here for theoreticians, but in principle, the first nearest, let me see. Wait. I had this discussion already 3 years ago, so I'm happy. No, I want to see this here. Probably. I mean, here it's even more common. In the theory, you say you have within the sublattice is J2, and in between the two sublattices is J1. And this is probably next nearest neighbors,
okay,
and that.
This is first nearest. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in reality, if you look in reality, you have, for instance, J and J2 prime, they should be very similar, because here you go this way, and here you go this way, so it may be more complex, and you have many different paths. But whatever it is, from an experimental point of view, I say I receive strongly frustrated magnets. And this is a good explanation how I can explain it. This is the... So... Yeah.
Thanks. While you've got this picture up, are there any spinels with two different A-site chemistries with that order? You know, so it's like a mixed...
That you mix the A-side. That's a substitute the A-side.
But substitute, but then also order. I guess because they have the same charge, so it would be very hard.
I'm sure there exist hundreds of them. I mean, the list of spinels is so long, I'm sure that must happen. There are many spinels, of course, with the A-side.
With a mixed order.
Two order, and you can mix, and they still order.
Okay, and they order. And actually, can I ask a quick terminology question? In the phase diagram that you showed, it was a few slides back from there, you had two paramagnetic regions, one with geometric frustration and one you labeled as bond frustration. What does the bond frustration mean?
I explain everything not good enough. The bond frustration for me means that ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic exchange are exactly equal. You see, these systems, I think, are governed by the same physics. But in this case, zinc chromium sulfide, ferromagnetic 90 degree exchange and the antiferromagnetic exchange are of equal strength, and the Curie-Weiss temperature of this system is zero. But it shows more or less a very similar physics like all the other systems. So, and this I call bond frustration only because I think I have ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic exchange of equal strength.
Okay, thanks.
So, just to comment on the previous question, there are fully A-site ordered spinels. Unfortunately, they're not magnetic. So copper, indium, and silver, indium on the A-site with the chromium spinels are fully ordered. And you go from FD3 bar M to F4 bar 3M, the group-subgroup relation of going from diamond to zinc blend.
Wow. Yeah.
I have a question about this phase diagram. On the side of the phase, I mean, the antiferromagnetic side, you tend to have rather complex antiferromagnetic structures, but still commensurate and rather small unit cells. Whereas on the right side, you tend to have these spirals.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised you kind of draw a continuous connections between the two. What is the relationship between them? Because in this case, it just okay, the structure adjusts itself and it's stabilized by nearest neighbor interaction. Whereas the other one, when you have the spirals, you think you have also to have second neighbors.
Probably absolutely correct. Now, first of all, I'm an experimenter. I don't care about if I can draw continuous lines. I just fiddle in some experimental.
Yes. Well, I don't. I just.
And no, but you are. But what I think what happens is that from all these compounds, which we call strongly frustrated, I think only zinc chromium and maybe manganese chromium and maybe cadmium chromium. They surface. I think always also in mercury, chromium O4, you have already an enormous contribution from ferromagnetic exchange. And for instance, here in these two compounds, in the sulfides and selenides, then it's a compromise. They still want, in some respect, become antiferromagnets, but the ferromagnetic interaction is so strong, and so they make ferromagnetic planes and twist a little. And you know that the mercury compound, it takes you 0.2 Tesla. To make the antiferromagnet to a ferromagnet. But nevertheless, these systems are dominated from very high temperatures already by ferromagnetic fluctuation. And I can't tell you, I think you have this direct exchange, the 90 degree ferromagnetic exchange, and overall that must be a more complex chromium O zinc O chromium exchange. And this three you have to fiddle around, but nevertheless, it's just a competition between antiferromagnetic and ferromagnetic.
I might add a comment in response to Paula's question. Actually, cadmium chromium 204 shows an incommensurate magnetic order, but it's a different type of thing than what happens on the other side. So on the other side, it's really probably the competition between first and second neighbor interactions, which are of the same order of magnitude, whereas for cadmium chromite, it's a special effect. Because here you start with an antiferromagnet, and if you add second neighbor interactions, you don't exactly get that type of a competition that leads to a spiral. Here I think the spiral is caused by a loss of parity, the inversion symmetry under a distortion. And that's what makes the crystal chiral, and then the spins respond to that through the spin orbit interaction.
I think the dispute about the zinc chromium sulfide is also not settled. Zinc chromium sulfide has a low temperature state with two or three magnetic phases which coexist. And always the people believed this is a defect, you have bad crystals and things like that. But meanwhile, no one was able to prepare a zinc chromium sulfide with a single magnetic phase. So I think it's the system that really decays intrinsically into ferromagnetic and more antiferromagnetic ordered regions, and therefore you have this multi-domain ground state with different magnetic phases. But for me, as I have to say, for me the most crazy thing is that all these systems with very different Curie-Weiss temperatures, from plus to minus, have an ordering temperature of 10 Kelvin.
I have one more question, if I may. So you showed in cadmium chromite there was a splitting of that chromium phonon into three at low temperatures,
yeah.
Right? How does that happen? If as far as I understand from Sun Hyun Lee's measurements, there's a tetragonal distortion on the low temperature phase. So one would expect a splitting of a triplet into a singlet and a doublet rather than three modes. You have any comment on that?
I have to say I have no explanation. It depends if you believe the experimental results or not. And look, this you have to be, you see this red line. You have to, we always this the red the, or the red line is the fit, and this empty squares. And you see there is this 1, 2, and 3. And it depends if you believe in that or not. And of course, the weight, most of the weight in this central line.
Okay, and so they're not the same weight.
Different weight. And I think that maybe the analysis takes into account as if you have very simple pattern of how the vibrations of the ions. And maybe in principle they're all rather mixed, and therefore you see a splitting of all different modes. But could that be a way? You say that's only symmetry. But then I don't know, but this then would indicate that the symmetry is lower.
Three, yeah. But then they would have the same spectral weight, right? Any other questions? Comments? Okay, let us thank our speaker.